Thank you to everyone who attended the 5th Annual WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference in Normal. We appreciate your support. A special thank you to these businesses for helping to make it possible: Air Scout, AgriNews, and the Andersons. More details on agriculture at WILLAg.org.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of December 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson. We'll be joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, to go through some of the 2019 projections he's been presenting at the Illinois Farm Economics Summits this week. By the way, you can join us on those summits tomorrow in DeKalb, Illinois, if you'd like. We'll be at Ferranda's Banquet Center, and then on Friday at the iHotel in Champaign. Walk-ins are certainly welcome. Registration at the door is $90. It's a morning-long event, and the registration fee includes a really great booklet and your noon meal. This has been one of the best Illinois Farm Economic Summits in memory. And that's not just me, it's many of the participants, because these guys have really put together a short-term and long-term look at agriculture, not only for the state of Illinois, but for the Midwest, the corn and soybean production that happens across the planet. So you want to make sure that you show up, because frankly, your banker is likely to be in the room, and you as a producer should be as well. The Illinois Farm Economic Summits have been going on all this week. This, of course, is the Closing Market Report. Not only will we have Jackie and Gary here, but we'll wrap things up today by talking about the agricultural weather forecast, that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, for this Wednesday edition of our programming. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being with us. And hey, Merry Christmas to you, too.
Well, the same to you, Todd, and to all of our listeners also. It'll be here pretty doggone quick.
In fact, it will. You know, one of the things I think we probably ought to talk about is the soybean market. It's been all over the board. What do you make of it?
I'll tell you what, I guess I've compared going to Six Flags Great America many times, but boy, it's certainly been there right now. It seems like one day we're up, then we're down, then we're up. And, you know, I think you can expect that because everybody's sitting on the edge of their seats waiting to see what's going to happen. But they've been really been disappointed, you know, as far as how many beans China's taken. And the fact, I think, that is a bigger issue is that they're going out of the Pacific Northwest. You know, they're not going out of the Gulf. They're not going to the region. And I think they expected that that's where they were going to come from. So we're going to have to wait and see. Today they bought 44 million bushels. Well, I should say yesterday they bought 44 million bushels of beans. It was just announced today. But it certainly didn't give any life to the marketplace.
Yeah, so that was a 44 million ton purchase, something like one. So over the week, they bought what, 2.5 million tons, if I were, or 2.5 million bushel of soybeans.
Yeah.
You're correct.
I'm sorry. 44 million bushels is what it is. I converted that. Yeah, you know, I think everybody's very very disappointed that we haven't seen any nice bounce coming out of this with China coming back in. You know, I was really. When they paid that second half on the tariff payment, Todd, I think that was a good thing. But, you know, on the other side, it's a negative thing because we saw a lot of producers who counted on it and didn't bother to hedge. You know, it's fortunate, you know, that it came through the way that it did. But it seems as if that attitude is carrying through, you know, to 2019. Some guys just expect it's going to happen. Now, I know you went to a meeting where Sonny Perdue talked about that. Could you kind of let the people know what he said?
Oh, sure. So this was a meeting in Champaign County, I think at the end of the month of October. And the administration has not changed their view on this, and I've asked questions of the congressional ag folks, too, if there would be any payments at all coming in 2019. The administration says certainly not from us. And on the Congressional Ag side, I think the Republicans are saying no. Conaway said no. I think Colin Peterson on the Democrat side said, well, we might have to take it up. So I think the point is there are two no's and one yes, maybe. And it was a yes, maybe. Yes, maybe.
So, okay. Yeah, and, yes, maybe.
And here I'm at the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, and frankly, the projections for 2019 look really bad. So the last few years in Illinois, Jackie, the trend, we've been above trend yield, and this is for the whole of the United States, too. And that's made the projections Illinois has made for the income each year wrong. It's made it too low. This year, they adjusted for that and said, you know, if we have high yields like we've been, we'll still lose $3,000 a year on a 1,700-acre grain farm and $60,000 if we're at trend yield without any help. So it looks like a pretty rough year going forward.
Yeah, it sure does. You know, it's just all the uncertainty that there is, and the price is going to reflect that until we get something settled.
So tell me about some of the other things that you watch, export sales, inspections, maybe fund positions.
Sure. Well, that's the one interesting thing here, Todd. So maybe we will see a bounce coming, because when you look at the expectations for export sales this week, and I'll start with beans, we've only hit not even 900 million metric tons over the last 2 weeks. Now they're expecting 2,000. Maybe we've got a bunch of sales sitting under there that we just don't know about yet. Corn, they're expecting 1,400 to 2,100. The highest we've hit is not quite 1,200. And so even the soy meal and soy oil look pretty good. So if this follows through, maybe we will get that balance that we're hoping for. On inspections, it's interesting. We've seen wheat go from being behind 17% last week to behind 15%, so it's improving. Beans went from 42% behind to 41.5% behind. They're improving in their export inspections being grain that's actually shipped and left. Now, corn, on the other hand, went from 80% 2 weeks ago to 75% last week, and now it's down only 73% ahead. So we're starting to see that slowdown. And I was talking front loading for a long time. This is what I really think is happening, is that we're just backing down. When you look at the fund positions, Todd, the player sheet just showed that the funds were net sellers of 2,500 contracts of wheat. They bought 7,000 contracts of corn yesterday. They bought 3,000 contracts of beans, 2,000 contracts of meal, and 3,500 lots of soy oil. Now, fund positions versus managed positions are very different. You know, funds are in and out, in and out, in and out. Managed, not necessarily. So, you know, it's just kind of interesting to look at another dimension of the marketplace.
And finally, you told me you've got some interesting export stats. What'd you look up?
Yeah, I got this from Steve Fried this morning, and he said the U.S. and Brazil supplied 84% of the world bean needs over the last 50 years, which I thought was pretty great. But demand has doubled in the last 20 years. So, you know, that's allowed some other countries to enter beans. And Paraguay and Canada actually passed Argentina last year when Argentina had the drought. But they're very close to Argentina. Now, in 1819, they expect to see 5.72 billion bushels of beans exported. And so if you take out Brazil, U.S., and Argentina, that leaves 660 million bushels of beans that have to come from other countries. So you can see that, you know, the market is going to continue to expand in all places, I guess, is what I have to say. I don't know about here, but other countries in the world, it's certainly going to continue to do that.
And finally, did I see that they reversed the decision on freight rates in Brazil?
I tell you what, how'd you like to live down there? Last week, the judge reversed it and said that they didn't have to pay the fines, you know, if they weren't paying the minimum freight rates. This week, he reversed himself, and he reinstated the fines for not paying minimum freight rates. So now the truckers are happy, and the farmers and the commercials are unhappy again. And again, everything's in limbo. The bean harvest has actually begun in some parts of Mato Grosso. Can you believe that? You know, these are 90-day maturity beans that were planted the 15th of September. So they're figuring that 1% to 2% of Mato Grosso's acres will be harvested before the end of December. and probably 15 to 20% by the end of January. That's way ahead of other years. So, you know, this relates back to what we were talking about last week, this window that we always hope for a bounce in beans is getting much more narrow just because they're so early on their harvest. Now, if you remember BR-163, you know, the soybean highway in the north, they figure it's going to move 440 million bushels of beans this year, up to the Amazon River ports. And I guess the good news for them is there's only 31 miles that are not paved. Pictures of guys sliding down those big hills in the mud. The Army is actually putting asphalt down on the two hilliest parts in hopes that that's going to take care of some of the problems, although they're going to have people there continuing to monitor and equipment there to help farmers or truckers if they can't get up the hills. In Argentina, they've had good rains, and they are building subsoil across all of their soy belt. So I guess the prediction that they may return, you know, to a more normal crop year this year seems to be coming true.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson.
Thank you to everyone who attended the 5th Annual WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference in Normal. We appreciate your support. A special thank you to these businesses for helping to make it possible: ADM, Illinois Beef Association, and Illinois Farm Bureau. More details on agriculture at willag.org.
Well, we're here at the Paradise Hotel and Casino in Peoria. For the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Two more to go now. You can join us tomorrow if you'd like. We'll be at Feranda's Banquet Center. That's in downtown DeKalb. We open our doors at 7:45. We welcome walk-ins. It's just $90, and it's been a really, really good Illinois Farm Economic Summits series this year. I encourage you to go ahead and walk in. Otherwise, you can pick some of it up online on Will Ag.org, as I've been interviewing maybe one person a day as we go along. On Friday, we'll be back in Champaign. Walk-ins are welcome there as well. And again, we open our doors at 7:45 a.m. One of the people that's been traveling with us all week is Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist and farm business management specialist at the U of I. I'm going to start with kind of the end of your presentation, which takes about a half an hour. And you show a slide that gives projected incomes for next year. There are two numbers that are important on that slide. One of them is negative $60,000, and one of them is negative $3,000. And they're important for a couple of reasons. Because you make, and the team makes, projections each and every year for income in the state on an average, I think, 1,700-acre grain farm. And you've been kind of high for the last several years, you've been kind of low for the last several years. These two numbers reflect, I think, some of that miss.
Yeah, so in the past several years, we make income projections every year, and we've been low, and the primary reason we've been low is because we've had exceptional yields in the past. Since 2012, every year there have been a corn and soybean above trend, and we typically use trend yields in our projections. So if we're above trend, we have better income than had we not used those higher yields.
And that's reflected in the $3,000 or the $60,000?
So moving forward to 2019, we come up with a minus $60,000 of income. And that's really bad because we've never seen that level. Even 2015, when we've had our lowest income ever, it was still just minus $1,000. So minus $60,000 is a big negative number. And that's using trend yields. And to give you a feel for that, that's a 205 bushel average in central Illinois. So it's not, it's a trend yield. So if we use the exceptional yields, which are about 20 bushels higher for corn and, you know, 8 to 10 bushels higher for soybeans, we get to the minus 3,000, which is still negative and still isn't good. But you can see there are one of the things that we haven't accounted for in the past just gets us up to zero. So it's our income projections are pretty dreary for 2019.
So we better go through some of the specifics on this FBFM farm. So how much of the land might be owned, might be rented, might be 50-50? How does it average out? Because it makes a big difference depending on what that mix might happen to be as we're talking about property.
Yeah, so we're projecting a 1,700-acre farm, which is about average for the state. So we're taking the average farm, about 18%, about 20% of it's owned. So 20% of the farm's owned, and the remainder is rented. And we use half cash rented, half share rented. And that just follows the trends in the state, or, you know, the trends in the state. Those percent rented, cash rent, and share rent vary across the state. Central Illinois will have about 50-50. Northern Illinois will have more cash rent, and Southern Illinois will have more share rent.
What can producers do to help alleviate the potential losses for the 2019 growing season?
So what we're looking at for this year is we're probably looking at pretty good incomes for 2018. Farmers have had exceptional yields. Many of them priced grain earlier in the year, so that was at higher prices than what we're currently at. And the market facilitation programs are a big deal. You know, it's going to work out to be a total of 165 per bushel for soybeans. 165 plus 850 takes you to a nice price, over 10. $10 over 10 on soybeans price and exceptional yields, and you'll have a profitable soybean year. That is not likely to happen in 2019 because program payment probably won't have market facilitation program payments, nor are we looking at $10 soybeans. We're looking at $9 soybeans for 2019.
And what do they do that makes this actually, I don't know, palatable, but easier to swallow?
Save money. So we have good incomes this year. So we use this income to build net worth and build working capital, reduce debt to asset ratio. So that will require foregoing any capital investments and building working capital instead of making investments. Batten down the hatches and reduce expenses everywhere we can, and save as much of that as possible. One other note is they probably will want to do some tax planning, and because 2018 tax liabilities could be quite high, particularly given the market facilitation program payments. We don't know yet if they're going to be in the second batch is going to be in the 2018 or 2019 year, but 2018 incomes could be good, so getting some estimates of that, maybe some shifting more of the expenses or prepaying more of the expenses, 2019 expenses in 2018 will be good from a tax management standpoint.
So manage the taxes, make sure that you don't spend money on capital investments, making sure that you actually shift some money from one year to the next too, using that in a way that helps you make it through 2019. Now, from the farm management perspective, there is one item that is a big input price, the anhydrous ammonia, and that has changed from fall to spring by about $100 a ton, quite likely. And I suppose there is some cost savings there that could be recouped based on when the application now has to be made, because most or many producers will have not been able to get anhydrous on this past fall.
Yeah, so anhydrous ammonia prices this fall were in the $500 range, $500 to $525. It looks like they're not going. Many farmers aren't going to get that on, and likely will have the prices rise in the spring to maybe something closer to $600 a ton. One of the things that they can do or think about doing is cutting rates. And what we see, a lot of rates are above what agronomists would suggest are the the most economical rates, which is 180 pounds. So if we're looking at rates above that, cutting those back, particularly given that we're putting those in the spring. If depending on the timing, we also won't need a nitrogen inhibitor. So if we can push that back, that will be another savings. So looking at cutting rates and also pushing it later will help some on those nitrogen costs.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
It is Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist. The in-rate calculator generally does show about 180 pounds for much of Illinois, but you'll need to check that. You can do that by just searching Google for in-rate calculator. The numbers that you see there were generated by the University of Illinois when you're in an Illinois county, and Emerson Knapsiger will have put that data in. And that 180 pounds that Gary talked about actually comes from Emerson, and it is the optimum rate. So that's the rate at which you maximize yield and you also maximize your income from a field. But you'll be able to calculate that on the in-rate calculator. Just put that into Google. Gary also mentioned the MFP payments and whether or not they may or may not come in this fiscal year, rather tax calendar year. I spoke earlier today at the Illinois Farm Economics Summit to Bill Graff, and he said, a lot depends on what happens in Washington and whether or not there is enough time left yet in this year to put those payments out to producers. Here's Bill.
Well, we're going to try. The Secretary and the President really want Illinois FSA to get these farm program payments, the market facilitation payments, out to farmers. We're going to do everything we can to get that done. Now, there's a lot of things that have to happen. The Office of Management Budget, they have to basically refill our checking account. They have to put money in the account. That's going to take them a little bit of time out in Washington, D.C. After they do that, USDA is going to have to go into Federal Register and tell everybody, hey, we're going to spend that money. They have to put a notice out. Once that's done, then Washington basically pushes these payments back out to us. Then we're going to have people in all the county offices go through, and it's going to take two people because one person has to check that, yes, that's a good payment. Then we have to have another person do a second party review and say, yes, that's a good payment. Once that's done, those payments will roll over. They sit there 24 hours. They go to the National Payment Center, and the money 3 days later will show up in your bank account, basically. The big problem with that is we're not working on Christmas. Everybody says now the president's given the Monday after or the Monday before Christmas off to federal employees. That starts surely really shortening up the number of days that we can do it. Most of the county offices, though, I think in 2 days, a few counties with bigger payments, it may be 3 days. But we really think that if we get this to us pretty quick, we can still get that money out this year. It just depends on when this comes to us from Washington.
Bill Graff, of course, is the director of the Illinois Farm Service Agency. One other note about these farm program payments, this market facilitation payment, it somewhat depends on whether there is a government shutdown, because if Washington does not come to some conclusion, FSA offices will close, and consequently, there just won't be enough days and time to get those payments calculated prior to the end of the calendar year. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. When we come back, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's a T-Storm weather. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. When we come back in just a couple of minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Thank you to everyone who attended the 5th Annual WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference in Normal. We appreciate your support. A special thank you to these businesses for helping to make it possible: Illinois Pork Producers, the Nature Conservancy, and USDA. More details on agriculture at willag.org.
It's Oatmeal Muffin Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1732, the first issue of Poor Richard's Almanac was published by Benjamin Franklin. Almanacs were very popular books in colonial America, containing practical household hints, puzzles, and, of course, seasonal weather forecasts. Franklin published his almanac for 25 years, and it sold as many as 10,000 copies a year. By the way, Napoleon Bonaparte considered the almanac significant enough to translate it into Italian along with the Pennsylvania state constitution. In 1863, Frederick Walton of London patented linoleum. Previously, oilcloth had been used to cover floors. In 1871, Samuel Clemens received a patent for an improvement in adjustable and detachable garment straps suitable for vests, pantaloons, and other garments. Today we call that invention suspenders. Clemens was also something of an author, perhaps best known for Mark Twain. In 1871, Albert Jones patented corrugated paper, which could be used to make boxes, which actually came into vogue in about 1890. And in 2004, Herbert Brown died. In graduate research during World War II, he discovered a new method to produce hydrogen gas, which was used in weather balloons and later fuel cells. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget to visit with us tomorrow. If you're in DeKalb, we'll be at Veranda starting at 7:45 a.m. for our fourth Illinois Farm Economic Summits meeting for the week. Walk-ins are welcome. The cost is just $90. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us. Let's start in South America and talk about the weather forecast there. What do you see?
Well, I think finally we're going to get a little bit of rain to fall in southwestern parts of Brazil as we go into this weekend and next week. Now, some of that region has been dry or mostly dry for the past 3 weeks with percent of normal moisture since the first of the month, largely less than half of normal, and many areas less than 25% of normal. So it's definitely been drying down. And some of the soil there is real sandy, so it doesn't take much of a dry bias to put crops into a stressed period. And a lot of the crop there is filling and setting pods, so it's not necessarily the best time for this dryness. We've lost a little yield potential. It's a relatively small area for the overall total crop there, but nevertheless, it's pretty significant where the dryness is present. So the rain that's coming up will put an end to the stress and will allow for some improvement to occur in crops there, but follow-up rain is still going to be needed. In Argentina, everything's pretty darn wet right now, at least in the eastern two-thirds of the country. The ground is saturated. We've had a lot of rain in the past week, some 8, 9, 10-inch amounts in a few spots. It hasn't been coming all at once, so they don't have any epic flood or anything quite like that, but they definitely need to see some drier conditions. Well, they're going to get that as we go forward to the weekend into early next week. A little less precipitation will occur, but we do have rain today and tomorrow in some of these areas. And then we'll look for returning rain a little later in early January for Argentina that will maintain a pretty good outlook overall.
Here in the United States, I know there was some stormy weather that was expected for next week as we head into Christmas. What do you think will happen?
Well, I still think that that's going to be the case, but today's midday computer forecast models took a lot of the storms and just kind of ripped them apart and changed their timing and all kinds of fun things. And I'm not ready to buy into the changes that took place at midday today. So with that said, I think we'll a near Christmas storm, probably the 26th and 27th in the upper parts of the Midwest, a fairly significant event. We could have blizzard conditions up across parts of that region, at least in a small part of the region. That would probably be the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota primarily, and some neighboring states. After that system pushes off to the northeast, we'll see another disturbance come into the central and southern plains probably sometime towards the latter part of next week, and that will eventually turn into a storm system that will go through the lower Midwest and the Delta and maybe parts of the southeastern states as we go into the last weekend of the month. So a pretty active weather pattern. It is probably a little too active, and we'll probably see future model runs back off a bit, but I think we all need to be aware of the potential disruption to some of our travel between Christmas and New Year holidays as long as this pattern is going to be in existence.
And finally, let's go back down under. Check in on Australia for me.
Yeah, Australia has had an unusually good six-week period here with timely rainfall occurring when El Nino is developing. That's something you don't see very often. Well, I think that's all coming to an end, and we're going to snap them back into a pretty typical El Nino environment as we go forward through the balance of this month. Hot and dry weather will likely dominate the region, and we'll probably see that continuing into January as well.
Hey, thanks so much.
You bet. Have a great day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. I'm UOBI Extension's Todd Gleason, wishing you a good day. Make sure that if you're in the DeKalb area tomorrow that you drop into our meeting there at Ferrandis. And on Friday, again, we'll be at the I Hotel in Champaign.